Happy solstice, everybody.
Good morning. The planets are conjoining.
Yes. Is the Mars Jupiter or the Jupiter Saturn thing? When is that?
Today.
So this is like, I never really thought about it. Like, it's the solstice and.
Yeah.
I hope the world ends today. I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. Why not?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Go out before we start walking around a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland.
Yeah. But this is what the sky looked like in 1226, which is pretty cool.
So we should introduce ourselves.
Yes.
I'm Mark Van Stenhoek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation Healing.
And, you know, if people who know me know I like some things like gummy bears, karaoke, puns, and alliteration. So today, A Sustaining Spring of Subversive Spirituality is the title because lots of S's in there.
Yeah.
I like that.
S squared times two.
Yeah, S exponential.
S to the fourth. You know, I also thought before we get too far and forget about it, we should talk about our schedule since this is Christmas week. Mm-hmm. So we're obviously here today. Mm-hmm. We're going to be here tomorrow.
Yep.
And then we'll be taking the rest of the week off.
Yeah.
So we'll be back on Monday. And then that next week, we all also will not be a full week, but we haven't totally worked that out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
So anyway, we got to pack, you know, 5 days of goodness into two episodes here.
And just to make things easier, like, you know, this is end of year. Dan and I both direct two different nonprofits. And so we want to give you opportunities to donate if you want. Just going to leave this bottom scrolling for a bit so we don't have to talk about it much. There'll also be a link or a link that you can't click, but you can type in yourself at the end. So we'll give you opportunities because people have been asking, where do we give?
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, today we're talking about, we had a, last week we talked about why aren't there more radical churches? Or maybe it was the week before. I can never, time and space are bending.
Yeah.
But
we bring it up every once in a while.
It comes up. It comes up. Like, so Dan and I are, you know, like, we're not super yay church is going to save the world, but we're invested. Like, we want to see the church become, and various expressions of church become, amazing places of transformation and liberation. We've talked about a little bit why that doesn't happen that much. Today I want to focus on, like, well, what would it look like? What does that even mean? You know, and there's different scales here. Like, so part of what prompted this today is, you know how your phone can sometimes say, hey, remember this image from 10 years ago? 15 years ago, I was early on in the stages of starting a church that eventually morphed into an intentional community. And so we were at our biggest, there was maybe like 30 of us, which is pretty big for an intentional community. And, you know, maybe, you know, 8 to 10 of those folks were guests. And we were really trying to do the the radical thing, but in a very small scale. Mm-hmm. And when you're small scale, there's not a lot of resources to go around. But the larger you get, the harder it is to get people to buy in. And so there's different versions and scales of this question of what does it mean to be a liberating community, a place of spiritual subversion, a place of resistance, where you begin to enact the kind of world you want to see.
Right. Yeah. And then my wife, Deborah, and I, we have also been involved in this sort of work for a long, long time, been part of different communities, been part of monasteries, been, you know, searched for that. And, you know, my joke about this is that if I had a dollar for everybody that said they want to be part of a radical Christian intentional community, but then wouldn't show up for the first organizing meeting, I would be a multimillionaire.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, there clearly is something going on here where there is this desire, but there also is this impediment. And, you know, to both of us, I think this connects so much with all of the things that have been revealed in the pandemic, right? And the ways in which our own formation, the ways in which the habits of capitalism, the ways in which we see ourselves connected or not connected to other people, you know, issues of kind of dissociative psychology and experience, our disconnection with our bodies, our embodiment, our inability to have real relationships with each other. Right. I mean, one of the things I keep thinking about is at one of the retreats that Mark and I gave a couple of years ago, we were talking about community. See, and it was so great. You know,
I know where you're going. Yeah.
Story, right? At the end of it all, you know, we give this kind of, I think the last day was really very focused on the issue of community. You know, this one woman said, well, I'm all about community except for sex and pooping. And Mark was like, we love sex and pooping in our community.
Not at the same time, though. I mean, I don't want to kink shame, but not at the same time for me personally.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that in many ways, though, this very kind of unintentionally, you know, this comment sort of encapsulated a lot of these issues, right? That, and then when you throw in the fact that we don't want to talk about money, right? And we don't really want to deal with what is our economic relationship. I think we see what a lot of these impediments are and a lot of the real challenges that that we need to overcome. If we're really going to create some of these alternative worlds.
Yeah, to me, that one of the things that I feel like a lot of people don't get, and I see this across the board anytime you talk about politics, is, and I got an email about this very thing earlier this week, or last week, this idea that somehow society is the sum total of people's values and choices. And so the idea is if we don't have something working, it's because people don't value that thing. Well, the way culture works is it creates a real strong center of gravity. If you deviate from it, you find things get more difficult. So one of the examples that I found struck me personally was being radical before having a child and being radical after having a child. So if you're a radical couple, no one is upset at you really that much. Unless you like burn down their auto zone, they're fine. Just stay over there. But once you have a kid, then you're like, you know, then you're a bad parent if you bring a kid to a protest. If you don't have a car, if you decide to like do alternative schooling, which we don't, he does public school. But I noticed right away, once I had a kid, I couldn't even stop people from making consumer choices for me. They'd give us plastic toys, they'd give us things, they'd give us Amazon gift cards, they'd give us, you know, we had to get a car seat that looked a certain way that. And all of a sudden, you, in order to have a child, like there's this well-worn path in our society. Mm-hmm. For you to resist that path, and just that one area, takes a lot of ego strength, confidence, and resourcefulness that is not easily accessible to everybody.
Right.
So you have people pioneering utopias, like any intentional community at some level is a utopian thing. You're creating a nowhere, aware where there was a nowhere before. Utopia means nowhere or no place. And so it's, you can't, and things don't work in life as they work on paper. So there's all these struggles. Like, what is it even supposed to look like? People argue about it. They underestimate how much pull society has. Like the moment.
Yeah.
I remember like intentional, like Catholic worker communities traditionally in the past would avoid having health insurance because their guests wouldn't have health insurance. And I remember this very famous case example of this couple. She got cancer. And they decided to get insurance and they felt like failures. People were like, oh, you got insurance because you got kids. Because like at a certain point, critiquing the health industry only makes sense if you have a viable alternative. So that kind of works at every level that way.
Yeah, and it, you know, and a great physical analogy and example of this is, you know, if one is interested in building something that runs on alternative energy or is, quote, off the grid, which I've done and been a part of for the better part of 40 years now. And it's that same kind of thing. When you're doing something that is different, right, as you say, from the culture, it's unbelievable how hard it is, right?
It's very
hard. You know, you've got to find the one company in the United States that's 1,000 miles away from you that makes the thing that you want. You've got, you know, you don't have a dealer in your area. You've got to, you know, ship it on a truck that costs a ton of money. Then if it breaks, you can't get parts, you know, and we talk about this in the physical world that until something is, you know, off the shelf, right? I mean, until you can walk into a Home Depot or Menards and Lowe's and get something, it's unbelievably, it's almost impossible to do, no matter how much desire you have, right? No matter how much time you want to spend. And even today, when people talk about the fact that, oh, it's so much easier to do this stuff, it's still like about 1,000 times harder than calling up the electric company and have them running a wire to your house.
Yeah. Well, and then there's this factor of wealth and privilege. So let's just make it as plain as possible.
Yeah.
The more privilege and wealth you have, the more freedom you have to engage your will into the world. So the idea of being independently wealthy means that you have wealth sustained by yourself that doesn't rely on other people. Now, you're more likely to be independently wealthy if you're a white, wealthy man, right? Now, unfortunately, the people who have the best instincts, insightfulness, and experience in doing alternative community are not wealthy and privileged. So, you know, Black urban communities, indigenous communities, like Latino, different communities, queer communities, that where there's less dominance. So, and if those two people come together, because these people up here realize, well, we can't really live the alternative unless we are in solidarity with these folks. And these folks say, well, we can't really do what we want unless we have resources. And they come together. Then somehow, by some strange, unexplainable reason, white men still end up dominating those systems because they have the resources.
Right.
So again, like you see this in every movement, you see it in an intentional community, and this creates a real problem. Now, unfortunately, we said we were going to talk about what would they look like, and we've been talking about the impediments. But I feel like it's important to say this is not, you don't just brainstorm some cool ideas, get people to sign up with you, and then do it and think it's going to be all easy and work great.
No, I mean, you know, and you have to recognize the problem, right? I mean, this is the issue of you know, of any kind of healing, right? So if you look at this as a healing problem,
yes,
right, that fundamentally we as humans and our societies are diseased. You know, everybody knows, right, if you're involved in medicine, that if you've got a problem, you have to have some level of diagnosis. Right, in order to fix the problem. I mean, if I come in with a bone sticking out of my leg and, you know, the doctor says, hey, you know, let's see how your lungs are doing. You know, you're probably going to want to find a new doctor, you know, because the diagnosis is you got a bone sticking out of your leg and that's what's got to be fixed. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I've just seen over and over again with these issues, and it's the same thing with communities, but it's also the same thing with the local churches, right? And, you know, so you get these pastors, they go to these local churches, you know, and they try to be radical, they try to really engage the gospel, and they get creamed. And there really is not a diagnosis of what is the problem. So it's extremely important. I mean, we can talk about what it looks like, but, you know, as the New England phrase goes, you can't get there from here if you don't know exactly what's going on.
Or
we got a couple comments.
The Midwestern version is, oofta, that looks tricky.
That's right.
Yeah, so next Monday is Sarah's birthday.
Woohoo! All right.
Happy birthday in a week.
Yes, we'll have a little interesting party.
Yeah, It's exciting to have it. Like, what I'm trying to think, what date? So that's, you have one of these sad, like, my birthday is January 9th, and so I always felt eclipsed by Christmas, and that's like a little ways away. You're like right in that Christmas spot where getting presents.
Yeah.
You don't get as many presents as people do in the summer. That's a bummer. Marx writes, isn't the impediment our values in this country? In part, yeah. The way they're embodied, like, structures are really hard to deal with. And our structures reflect a set of values that we don't even sometimes recognize. Like, there's, every community has this where they have their stated values and then their silent values that actually determine things. And the United States is probably one of the best and worst examples of the world of that, of what we say we're about and what we're actually about. And so that gets really tricky to navigate in and push up against. Series writes, people want to jump in without preparation, resourcing, and stabilization. Definitely without understanding how we collectively and personally learn habits. Personal habit changes take 90 days of exploration. I think you're making a great point, and that you're just using the one example of a personal habit. I think people almost always underestimate, like, how much it's going to take to change things. And again, part of it is because I'm just going to keep repeating this. So many of us, particularly white men, are indoctrinated with this idea that if you have good thoughts and you can enact them in the world, and if they're right, then people will come support it and it'll succeed. Like, this is the American myth, from good idea on paper to actualization. And if it doesn't work that way, there's something wrong with you and your thought that you had in the beginning. And somebody with a better idea will succeed. That's not how things work in life.
Right. Even more so, there's something wrong with somebody else who is preventing you from getting your good thought out in the world.
Yeah. So if individual habits take 90 days, I don't even know what it would take to establish a alternative social practice with some teeth.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah. So. And I would say that the 90 days is short.
I mean, for brushing your teeth, maybe 90 days is enough to establish.
Maybe.
Depends on how complex the practice is, I guess. And there is a cycle too, yet we think we can jump in like that. Julie writes, churches should teach congregants on Jubilee. Oh my God.
Right.
I mean, this is kind of where I would want to start.
We're talking about
what it looks like.
Okay. No, go ahead.
Jeremy writes, are there levels of subversion that are acceptable? My church probably won't start a common purse tomorrow, but when I preached on Jubilee, we literally raised $50,000 in 1 minute to redistribute to those struggling with debt. It isn't changing the system, but it felt like a good step. I mean, this is always the hard thing with utopias or talking about political revolution, is, you know, like, I love the idea that someone can engage in a propaganda of the deed, like, blowing up a terror, like a dictator, and then everyone will rise up and create utopia. Like, that's what revolutionaries always hope will kind of happen. But it doesn't usually happen that way. But at the same time, there's also this myth that if you just kind of incrementally change, that you'll move in the right direction. And we tend to be naive about how there are other cultural forces pushing back. So even though in the United States, people think we're progressing all the time, there are some key areas in which we've been regressive during my entire lifetime.
And so Jeremy, this is a good example and raises, I think, a very clarifying point when we talk about, okay, so what would these communities look like? Mm-hmm. And what your example shows us and can lift up is the difference between a single action and a change of life, right? So that action, I mean, that's cool. And you know, obviously all those people that get that money and get their debt wiped out, that's good, right? So please don't, there's some very weird misunderstanding with somebody that happened on an episode last week. You know, please don't hear us saying that's not good. I mean, that's great. And if somebody's,
if every church did something like that, it would, that would constitute a very seismic shift, I think.
Right. However, the question then is, what happens tomorrow? Right. And so if that single action is also not a part of a whole change of habit and a change of life, then ultimately what will go on is that all those people that you gave away the 50 grand to that debt, you know, at some point in the future, they will have that same debt again, right? Because the system and the habits of life have not been changed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why, you know, that's the main reason why these churches do not become subversive, because they may be fine with a certain action, a single action, but everybody then goes home and their process of life is essentially the same. And so that's the really tricky part, right? So what is a different process of life? And, you know, before we've talked about the issue of, you know, humans kind of needing to evolve, right? And, you know, so that's the thing about evolution. And I find all the time that physical examples are really helpful when we're talking about psychological and spiritual things, because we often understand those so much better. So the definition of a new species, right, is that you cannot, the members of the new species cannot mate with the members of the old species. I mean, it's this very basic definition, right, that they have moved to a place physiologically, biologically, where they're occupying a completely different eco space, and they are now their own thing. And so, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? That you somehow have to occupy a whole different space, a different way of living. And it doesn't mean you don't, I mean, those creatures interact with the rest of the ecosystem still. It's not like they're disconnected from the world. They don't travel to Mars or something.
But they no longer reproduce the old system.
Yeah, they no longer reproduce the old system. And so they fit into the ecosystem in a new way, and they represent some kind of new possibility. And so that's what we're talking about, that we're talking about creating a new species, right? A new way of being human, and groups of people, enough of those people that you create. And that's the other thing about a new species, is you have to have enough of them that they're then self-sustaining. They can reproduce. And so, you know, I feel like that's a helpful way of kind of envisioning this. So what would it really mean that you have a group of people that they just take for granted that, yeah, I'm just sharing my stuff with these other people. They take for granted that Jubilee Economics is a basis of reality. They take for granted that doing my own healing work, so I'm not dumping all my projected shit on everybody else, is a way of being in the world, right? They just take for granted that all these kinds of things that we're talking about, that is the mode of operation, right? Relationships are more important than the crap that I'm buying for somebody. You know, taking time for all of these, you know, we talked about art as work, we've talked about healing as work. Taking time for all those things and not feeling bad that I don't have some shitty job necessarily that's occupying all my time and energy and making widgets. So, you know, it really is a different species activity.
Mm-hmm. Philip writes, I just finished reading Decolonizing Wealth and found it helpful resource for understanding points of entry for engaging money as a tool for healing. Thanks for
that. That's a great book. Yeah.
Julie Race, and figure out how to exercise the spirit of racism out of our congregants.
Right. And that's a part of the relationship, right? Is, you know, for us white people to realize our malformation and to be in different relationship with ourselves and with others.
Mm-hmm. And this is a good point from Juiced. Sometimes sudden changes, you can call them revolutions, are possible, both socially and individually. For me, quitting smoking cold turkey was ultimately easier than gradually reducing it, which didn't work. Yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, I'm a far leftist, so I believe that we should be working towards revolution rather than just kind of incremental reforms. But I also recognize, like, you can't, like, make it happen. It's not based on how hard you try only. You know, different people, like, have tried quitting smoking, and then one time they can. Like, and there's kind of a mystery to it. And the only way, to me, the only way like I see changes happen at a local political level is that you keep engaged in the process, even though you don't know when there'll be an opportunity for some big shift. So when the opportunity comes, you're ready for it. It's like, yeah. It's again, what spiritual practice is like. You don't do spiritual practice thinking, well, you know, if I just do this every day, I'll just slowly continue until I'm fully enlightened. Mm-hmm. And that's in the, you know, like, that this is somehow happens just by short force of will. Right. It's like, to me, it's about making yourself available to possibilities, because there's this in Christian spirituality in particular, we have this idea that there's a Holy Spirit, which was part of the image used today, that's independent of your will. The Spirit sometimes does stuff. You can't make the Holy Spirit do stuff. It's not mechanistic, but you have to be available and present, and then you can respond.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I mean, this idea is supported, you know, mathematically by chaos theory, you know, models of speciation, how new species come into being. It is exactly this kind of stuff that, yeah, you have gradual changes all the time, but the big shifts are sudden jumps. And you know, that's a really important mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Julia writes, we recreate our messy ways unless the internalized oppression can be healed. Yeah. I mean, this is, again, the sort of give and take between, do you change systems by changing yourself? Yes. Do you change yourself by changing systems? Yes. Yeah. And you can't really ignore either of those. And neither of those are like, this is why I'm not a full-on Marxist materialist. I think you have to do inner work that is like not really generally encouraged in most Marxist spaces. At the same time, I'm also not some pure only live in spirituality guy. Like, I'm into politics too, because I think it's naive to think that if I do enough spiritual practice, enough people do spiritual practice, by that, by itself will cause us to have utopia.
So does that mean I need to return those Lululemon pants that I'm sending you for Christmas?
No, this to me is both system change and personal change. Lululemon, are those like kind of spandexy pants? Is that like a yoga thing?
That's a super high end yoga thing.
I think I look good in those, so send them. Ellen writes, Marxists call this problem non-reforming reforms. Changes that don't change things at a fundamental level. And this is partly why Trotsky has this idea of the perpetual revolution, which isn't that different in my mind than the Benedictine idea of the continual conversion. And I think both of those ideas should be brought together in how we think about what sorts of systems and communities we create. Does it nurture certain practices at an individual and smaller level that bring about healing? What Julia was talking about, exercising white supremacy, exercising capitalism and classism. But if you don't create structures for people to do something different, then that's just all just catharsis. And this is part of the critique that's coming out more and more about white social justice educators who talk about this catharsis and changing your perspective and don't talk about changing anything in the system. And when we see that happen, we need to know there's some bullshit happening.
Yep.
Julia is the same. Preached in. Just want to.
Thank you, Julia. Yeah, sense. And Jeremy had a comment above that.
Oh, thanks. Absolutely, Dan. This is my challenge personally, and as a pastor, living into those different processes of life, the pushback of society is amazingly strong. It really is.
It is, and again, using the biological example, there's no such thing as a species of one, right? I mean, you know, that if one new species organism appears, it lives its life and it dies, and that's it. And this is continually the problem that pastors face, right? Is that they're essentially trying to be a species of one within these systems that do not want to shift. And, you know, then all kinds of really painful things happen. Keep moving.
Series writes, gradual intentional changes often prepare us for big shifts that come.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what spiritual practice is about, right? Regular spiritual practice. You're waiting, you're listening, you're watching. Yeah. And then when the big shifts come, you have much more awareness and attention and resilience for that.
And this is hard too, like investing energy into movements and these sorts, or even practices, like that's, it's hard because society doesn't make it easy. But I also, you know, the way this looks, just to kind of call out something, often I'll be talking with someone about various actions like defund the police, like stopping oil. People will say, you know what they should do? You know, we should do. And they'll like throw out this utopian idea. Like they have this idea. They're not involved in the ground and stuff, but they really believe that if they drop in the better idea, that somehow something will happen. I hear this all the time from people who are sideline politickers. And it, to me, it reveals like there's a fundamental disconnect there. You can't really, you don't change things by dropping in the better ideas. It's not Elon Musk. We were going to potentially talk about Elon Musk today. Elon Musk is not one of the wealthiest men in the world because he has the best ideas. We need to recognize that. There's other forces at play. So we need to and this is hope for us because you don't have to be damn smart in order to be part of changing, being a part of good change. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, the goal isn't to be the cleverest person in the room. Spirituality teaches humility and presence and compassion that leads to wisdom is sufficient for a community if you do healing work and be a part of changing systems around us. Stephen writes, seems to me that revolution can't be dependent on similar belief systems, but rather on basic agreements on what conduct matters. Sustainability, justice, ethics, progressive politics, etc. I bet there would be a lot of small communities that could create momentum, even if it meant aligning Quakers, Buddhists, agnostics, and Christians.
Well, maybe. I mean, we have not seen that yet. And I think it gets to exactly what you're talking about is that the challenge is that, right, you know, healthy relational spaces are based on basic agreements mm-hmm. that people then can keep or change collectively if they want to. And, you know, that's where the rubber hits the road. It's like what, you know, Mark, you're just talking about from a political point of view. I mean, if you're not really engaged and you think you can just come in with a good idea, that generally doesn't go very well. And it's the same thing, you know. And again, if you're going to be part of a new corner of the ecosystem of the world, you know, that requires a permanent sort of shift, right? I mean, you know, a new mammal can't just one day say, hey, I'm going back to being the old mammal. You know, I don't like being this new mammal anymore. And the problem is you sort of, everybody like goes halfway in or a quarter way in, and they're always kind of eyeing the door of like, okay, well, how can I get out of here? And that makes it really hard.
I mean, I do have to say, I think it'd be really useful if I had toes on my feet like a gorilla.
You do have toes on your feet, Mark.
I mean, thumbs on my feet. You know, like the little.
I hope you have toes.
You know, that little thumbing thing.
Yeah, right. The extra
thumb. I mean, why did we get rid of that? We need that back. Stephen appreciates the Lululemon pants joke. I don't even know if I've seen Lululemon pants, but I'm excited to get it for Christmas. Thanks, Dan. Karen writes, new monastic communities are exploring this under the radar. I find that the communities that are exploring this stuff the best, people hardly ever hear about. The people hear about the big churches that dabble. Like, and this is another piece of how capitalism works. The best, like, it's a lie that the best products are the ones that people know about. Like, McDonald's doesn't have the best cheeseburger. I had someone get angry at me. This is funny. Someone got lost their crap on me because I said In-N-Out burgers were mediocre. Like, and I get it. That has more to do with being Californian or loving having memories than it does with some objective idea that somehow In-N-Out burgers are the best expression of burger ever. But the fact is, like, and this guy, part of his argument was like, look, millions of people love it, so they can't be wrong. I'm like, that's not how any of this works.
Hey, look, everything is the best burger when you're really stoned.
That's true. That's why I like White Castle.
So All right, we're over time. We got a couple.
Speciation to the new creation.
I like that.
Some rhyme to that. I like that.
That's a great way to end. All right. Well, we blew through another episode. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody. Great comments as always. And yeah, stay safe out there.
Yeah, and we'll see you tomorrow. See you tomorrow.